You're listening to a podcast of the Gary Doyle Show. Heard weekdays from noon till 3 on All News Radio, 570 News.
Who doesn't love 205 on a Friday? Gary, just checking in here with our World Gym Winner of the Week. We don't want to forget this just because I'm not here. I guess I am. This week's winner, because here's the deal. We are giving away this total 12-week total transformation program free. We're giving away one a week for a year. All you have to do is go to 570news.com and click on the icon, send me the message, and tell me why you deserve this 12-week total transformation package. But here's the deal. You have to be serious, because if you're not serious, then, well, we're just not interested, because this is a definite improvement. This is going to be a big change for you. You are going to see amazing changes, not just in your physical self, but in how you feel about yourself. Wes and his team of trainers and nutritionists at World Gym, they take the time to discover your goals. They sit down, they look you in the eyes. That's why the program works, but you have to be committed. Here is this week's winner of the 12-week total transformation package from World Gym, and here's what she had to say. Okay, here's the deal. I turned 30 this week. Shouldn't that alone make me a good candidate? And I feel like I need a fresh start. Back in May, I decided to leave everything back in Toronto, including my friends and job of 5 years, because I was mugged around the corner of my house and didn't feel safe anymore. I moved from a city I knew to a city where I've never lived and don't know anyone. So far, though, I'm loving it. I've been trying to get out and meet people, but I lack confidence because of my appearance. I would love to be part of this challenge because I feel like I'm starting a new chapter in my life by moving here, and I need a total body transformation. And with that explanation, we congratulate Amanda Civic of Waterloo. Amanda, you are our latest winner of the 12-week total transformation package from our friends at World Gym and 570 News. We'll be in touch. We'll let you know how you can get started on turning that around, and we'll see you at World Gym.
Yeah, and Gary, just from us to you, of course, too, it's working. You're looking better than ever, and even coming in while you're not scheduled to be here, which is enough, by the way. When you're not in the room, you're not in the room. And I hope I've been holding up this end capably in your absence as we continue our final hour. Now, go. Just go. Don't even look back. Our final hour together for not only this Friday, but this week here on The Gary Doyle Show. I am Mike Farwell filling in. And we're going to talk. This ties back into something we sort of touched upon earlier in the show today when we were talking about the Bloc Québécois bill proposal in Ottawa that would allow a family to collect employment insurance payments to stay home with their child if that child was injured in the commission of a crime. And the question that was put to our MP was, where do you propose the child goes if not back home to the family? And his answer was a hospital. And unfortunately, we're seeing these sorts of things playing out here in the province of Ontario, where the province's mental hospitals are actually turning their backs on mentally ill offenders. Cynthia Fromstein joins us. She is a criminal lawyer and also the alternate chair on Ontario's review board. And Cynthia, thank you very much for the time today.
My pleasure, Mike.
We are seeing, as I understand it, some judges actually now taking action against these hospitals who are turning away patients. Is that true?
That's right. There have been two recent and very important decisions. In both, there were, let me break them down. One was an order by the court for someone who'd been found unfit to stand trial on a criminal offense. The judge ordered that person to be held under the criminal code at a hospital while he was awaiting his review board hearing. He wasn't taken. He was taken to jail because there were no beds available at the hospital. The review board hearing happened. The review board, which is a board created under the criminal code, they ordered him to be held on the minimum secure unit at the Center of Addiction and Mental Health. He wasn't taken. And so his lawyer ultimately filed an application at Superior Court to declare his detention unlawful. In a similar type of case, this one's Heinahan. The accused was found not criminally responsible. Again, a judge ordered him to be held at a hospital waiting for his hearing. He was taken to the jail and held there in contravention of the order. The review board ordered that he be taken to the hospital on their disposition. And again, he was not taken and kept at the jail. And the lawyer brought an application to the Superior Court. So the situation is that there are judicial orders and quasi-judicial orders by the review board for people to be treated in a hospital who are mentally disordered. And the hospital is saying, we have no beds, and they've been held at jails, which is completely unlawful.
So a couple of things come from this, Cynthia. What recourse do the hospitals have? I mean, if there's no room, there's no room.
I guess the issue is one of funding. These are, you know, constitutionally valid judicial orders. In the same way that if a judge ordered someone to go to jail, and the jail said, "I'm sorry, we have no room." Mm. I mean, these are orders that must be adhered to. From the hospital's perspective, it is. I can't say whether it is a lack of funds that are coming to the hospital or a lack of the distribution of their funds, but it's unquestionable that the care of mentally disordered people has to be given some priority.
What are the repercussions, Cynthia, of not getting these people into hospitals for the mentally ill? What happens if they just end up in the prison system?
Well, first of all, it's unlawful. But, well, clearly the whole purpose of the criminal provisions for people who are mentally ill is not to punish them in a jail, but to treat them in a hospital with the hope that their mental health will be restored. So as a society, I think it's a slur on our society to be putting them in jails. For the person with a mental illness, jails are not a therapeutic environment, and their mental illness is apt to become worse, despite, and I would like to say, I think all the frontline workers are doing their best, whether the mental health workers, the people in the jails who are trying to assist them while in custody. But the facilities are not suited to people with mental disorders. The longer you remain untreated, the worse your disorder is apt to get. And jails are places that, some of these people, their behaviors may be bothersome. They may be annoying, and that might aggravate other inmates and subject them to violence.
So not to put too fine a point on it, but based on what you're saying, the system is broken.
This system is broken.
Yeah.
The system is in place. So the system itself is set up properly, in my opinion, but it is not being funded.
Should we be applauding these judges that have really stood up against the ignoring of these judicial orders? Because, I mean, based on the examples you cited earlier, had these judges not pushed back, how would we have known this was happening?
Absolutely. I think it takes the person's counsel who's brought it to the attention of the court, and then the fact that the order has been made declaring the detention unlawful is important. One of the justices in Singer ordered costs against the Crown, and I think that is very significant. To my understanding, that's the first time costs have been ordered, and sometimes when there's money involved and there's now a sting of financial cost to the Crown, I think it's going to get their attention as well.
Where, Cynthia, does the responsibility ultimately lie here? If a judge issues an order, and that order is ignored at the hospital based on what we're talking about because there is no room there. I mean, where is this going to trickle down to?
I
hesitate to use finger
of
blame.
What the court said, and in the court particularly where costs were issued, it goes back to the Crown. These are criminal proceedings brought in the name of Her Majesty the Queen. In one of the cases, the court was said in very strong terms, the judge, Justice Madam Justice Keightley, who ordered the costs award, said it was completely inappropriate for the Crown to say, to wash their hands of it and say, well, we've done the order, now it's up to the defense to make sure the order is complied with. Mm. So the costs were made against Her Majesty the Queen, against the Crown, and that's where it has to trickle down to. There has to then be pressure put on. As I said, I don't know, I can't say personally whether it's that the Ministry of Health isn't funding them, the hospitals properly, or that the hospitals' boards are not allocating the funds properly. But the pressure has to be put to have that done.
It is a tangled web indeed. Cynthia, thank you so much for the time today.
My pleasure.
Cynthia
bye-bye.
Fromstein, bye-bye. She is a criminal lawyer. She is a member, in fact, the alternate chair of Ontario's Review Board. And we've talked about this. This came up in conversation in our newsroom earlier today here at 570. And because when you talk about the mentally ill and the mentally ill not getting the treatment they require, the outcomes are almost always tragic. And you need look no further than the case that is currently making headlines, that being the death of Ashley Smith at Kitchener's Grand Valley Institution for Women back in 07. The inquest into which will now be expanded. That's why it's still in the news all these years later. We here at 570 News spoke to Karen Graham as part of our own furthering of the story. Karen Graham is the mother of Trevor Graham, who 1 month after Ashley Smith, with her mental illness, died in one of our correctional facilities. Karen's son, Trevor, was shot while robbing a pharmacy in Kitchener and died. And both of these people, Trevor Graham, Ashley Smith, Trevor was 26, Ashley was 19, within 1 month of one another, they both die essentially because they were mentally ill and the system was unable to get them the help that they needed. And so here we have now these judges taking a stand, because the situation that exists in our system right now is such that hospitals for the mentally ill are actually turning away patients who have been ordered there by a judicial document. So they are in contravention of a judicial order by turning away these patients, and yet they have been doing just that. So if not for these judges standing up and asking that something be done about it, shining a very bright light on what is a very serious issue, we wouldn't have known. So now that we do know, the question becomes, what do we do about it? Is it the magic bullet again of funding? We need to throw more money at this? Does the money need to be spent differently in our mental health facilities? And ultimately, what it really comes down to, are we giving fair treatment to the mentally ill? I know there are so many personal stories about dealing with mental illness in your own family. How have you found the system to deal with that? Are we treating the mentally ill fairly? That's the question we put to you. We take your calls after this time out. You're listening to The Gary Doyle Show. I'm Mike Farwell. This is 570 News.
The facilities are not suited to people with mental disorders. The longer you remain untreated, the worse your disorder is apt to get. Some of these people, their behaviors may be bothersome. They may be annoying, and that might aggravate other inmates and subject them to violence.
And therein lies the rub, as Shakespeare would say. Cynthia Fromstein, criminal lawyer, alternate chair on Ontario's review board, talking about the mentally ill and our systems, and I hesitate at times to use that broad term system, but it is our system's inability to adequately care for and treat the mentally ill. And what we have seen time and again is mentally ill patients being turned away by the very facilities, institutions, hospitals, whatever you want to call them, that are there to treat them. And because in many of these cases they're being turned away against the orders of a sitting judge, well, we've got a problem, don't we? Because it then is in contravention of the law. So we've had some judges kind of push back and say, hang on, you are not allowed to turn away these mentally ill offenders that we send your way because it is by our judicial order that they are there. So what do we do? And do you think the system is treating the mentally ill fairly? Star 570 is the cell phone number. In town, it's 519-570-2545. And long distance, toll free at 1-800-570-5715. What we get to is a situation that Cynthia kind of hints at in the clip that we heard coming back from commercial. These mentally ill offenders don't fit, if you will, in the prison system. Their behaviors may aggravate others in that correctional system. And really, their symptoms and the issues that they are dealing with already are only exacerbated in that environment. Because without proper treatment and without the necessary facilities, these people are more often than not left to fend for themselves. And again, we can all remember, can't we, the Ashley Smith example. Here was a young woman, just 19 years of age. You know, the whole thing with Ashley Smith, the whole process that became what ultimately resulted as the end of her life, started with throwing crab apples at the mailman. It was an act of mischief is the word, I think, that best describes that. An act of mischief, which led to incarceration, which led to, in the final 11 months of Ashley Smith's life, 17 different correctional facilities that she was shuttled between. All the while not getting the treatment that she so desperately needed. And so the environment that she found herself in during that last year of her life, and a handful of the years before that, just continued to deteriorate her condition. Until, ultimately, in the absence of anything else, Ashley Smith ended up taking her own life. She was looking for some sort of stimulation, some sort of way out of the darkness that was her own world. And in the end, she would die. And she died right here in our city at the Grand Valley Institution for Women, a federal correctional facility. Had she not, and we spoke to Karen Graham about this, mother of Trevor, who was shot during a drugstore robbery in Kitchener the same year, within a month of Ashley Smith's death. But it just goes to show how often these things are happening. These two happened to occur in our own community. If they hadn't, if Ashley Smith had died at an institution in the Maritimes, New Brunswick, where she was from, or somewhere out west or up north, whatever, would we be as aware of the situation as we are today because it happened here? But I, for one, applaud these judges for taking a stand and trying to force the issue with these mental hospitals, these hospitals for the mentally ill, in saying, listen, if a judicial order comes your way, you best follow it. And overall, if nothing else that we've learned from the cases of Trevor Graham and Ashley Smith, and, well, Trevor LaPierre comes to mind as well. We called him the Christmas card killer. If nothing else is accomplished from those stories, it ought to be an awareness that the system is broken and it needs to be fixed. And I am coming up against the clock. We've got an update from the 570 News Center with Arlene Dowell. We're going to pay a visit with Louis B. Hobson in the next little bit, find out what's going on at the movies this weekend. Also, Steve Spott, head coach and general manager of your Kitchener Rangers. Looking forward to that conversation because, among other things, we can address with Steve what we talked so much about after that game against Guelph on Tuesday night. It got so out of hand. And why were certain players on the ice at certain times? Well, we'll find out from the coach. You can have that question answered. So stay with us. A great half hour still coming your way on The Gary Doyle Show. I'm Mike Farwell. This is 570 News. And welcome back to the show for your Friday afternoon as we come up on the end of another program, not just for today, but for the week. We will, of course, get you set up for hockey because Friday night is hockey night in Kitchener. That's coming up in a little bit. But, of course, we also take a look ahead at the movies for this weekend. And for that, we are joined by our Friday film fanatic,
Louis B. Hobson from the very chilly, as I understand it, home offices in Calgary, Alberta.
Yes, God, winter's here.
You know, I get a little bit frustrated at this time of year, too, because I don't like the cold. And it's cold enough here for me, but we're up to 6 Celsius today.
No, we're in the minuses, deep in the minuses. But they're promising us we're going to go up to about -4.
Whoa.
That's going to be balmy.
There you go. Well, listen, what better time to duck into a movie theater out your way, too? And, of course, the big movie this weekend is the latest installment of Harry Potter.
Yes, and this is going to be gargantuan. It really is, because of course we're in the home stretch now. This is part one of the end of the series. Okay, this is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Ooh,
and so this final installment then does come in two parts.
It comes in two parts,
just to drag it out.
They are milking that cash cow for all it's worth. Let me tell you, I don't see why it had to be that long. But then all the Harry Potter fans, when I say that, go, but the book was, you know, much, much longer, and there was much, much more in it. Yes, and when you read, that's, you know, that's one thing. But to sit there and watch it on the screen, and for they've cut so much out, so we don't know who this character is, but they come in and they die, or they come in and they're menacing and they leave. You have to be a Potter fan to really enjoy this one.
And they shot them simultaneously.
Absolutely,
right.
Yes. Well, these kids are getting a bit, you know, long in the tooth.
And that's exactly, and that's where I was going with this, because if it's one criticism I hear frequently with regards to the Harry Potter scenario, mm-hmm. it is just that. They started out as kids. They're supposed to be, he's the boy wizard, right? And now he's essentially a young man.
Yes, he's in his 20s.
Right.
But, you know, they still carry it off. And it would have been, I think, ridiculous to bring in new young actors, right?
Yes.
And these three actors have gone through the whole process, and they really can act now.
Yeah, well.
And that's what makes this really worth it.
Yeah.
But for me, what happens is, Mike, is that this turns out to be the perils of Pauline. Every 10 minutes we have to have another tragedy. We have to have another chase. We have to have another. But I guess that's part of what was so exciting with the book, right?
Right.
It was a page-turner.
Yep.
You had to turn 2,000 pages, whatever it was, but it was still a page turner.
But a lot of action in this one.
Yes. This thing's going to make well over $100 million this weekend alone.
Is the kiss is it worth all the buildup?
No.
No.
No. I mean, certainly if you're still only 12 or 13.
Right.
You know, the naked Harry and the, you know.
Yeah.
The naked Hermione with Ron looking in. But no, it's not. Now, apparently there are racier scenes that may be on the DVD. I don't know. But who cares?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, who cares?
Okay, so Harry Potter will be the undisputed king of this weekend's
box office.
Absolutely,
and yeah. You know, it might end up just being the undisputed king of the whole holiday season.
Oh, of course, we are into that.
Yes,
right.
This is the start of the holiday season. This is it, you know, happy holiday.
Well, you and I have talked in the past, and it's always around this time of year because it's right around the time Gary usually takes some time off and I get to fill in. And I always look forward to the late fall into the holidays because this is when we tend to start seeing these movies that will be Oscar contenders.
Oscar nominated.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
I don't think we're in that range
just yet,
but we're getting closer.
We are.
And one of the movies that is out this weekend that actually I am quite interested in, have been since I started seeing previews, is The Next 3 Days.
This is the Russell Crowe movie.
Right.
Bomb. Your own backyard genius, Paul Haggis.
That's right. Now, he was a Million Dollar Baby as well, right?
And he's, yes, he wrote. He's Crash. That's the important one for
right,
him.
Of course, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the Valley of Eli.
And now, this reunites as well Russell Crowe with somebody he was on Mystery Alaska with many, many moons ago, as I recall.
Elizabeth Banks.
Yes.
Yes. What it is he's a... He's just an ordinary man. He's us, okay? And his wife comes to their dinner party, and she's all upset. She's late. She's had a fight with her boss. And then they break down his door later and arrest her for the murder. And off she goes. And then she's been in jail for 3 years, and he is determined to get her out. So where does he go? Onto the Internet. And he puts, how to break out of jail. And up pops Liam Neeson. Who's got his own website, I'll help you break out of jail. And he teaches him, you know, gives him the fundamentals. And then the last half hour of the movie, last, is very tense. It's very, very tense.
And is it tense, Louis, because the sense I get from the trailers is that we're not really sure if his wife is innocent or not?
Yes, and I think with the French film on which this is based, for her, you really didn't know. But, you know, the Americans are going to let that go. They're going to, you know, even Paul Haggis is not going to leave us in that netherworld.
Right.
But as long as you're still thinking, that's what makes the movie so much fun. It's too long.
Okay.
It's 2 hours. This is a, you know, this is a thriller. It should be 90 minutes at the most.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe has been very interesting on talk shows. He said when Paul sent him the script, he thought, wow, what a great romantic drama. And he said, suddenly everybody's saying this is the thriller. But that's how Paul has cut it. That's how it has been edited. It really is much more, I mean, there's still the romantic drama in there, but it's much, very much a thriller.
Okay, and then from there we move on to Fair Game, which is Naomi Watts.
This is based on the true story, right?
Right.
Valerie Plum, she was the CIA agent, and her husband Joseph Wilson. And Wilson was sent over by the Bush administration to find those bombs, the mass destruction.
The weapons of mass destruction. Yes, of course.
And, of course, they didn't find them.
Yes, we remember. Very well documented.
Yeah. And eventually he wrote a column on it. And, of course, the Bush administration went, you can't do that to us. And they couldn't crucify him, so they crucified her. And they revealed her identity, and we see just how it destroyed her life, her marriage, her everything, right?
So conspiracy theorists, they're going to love this because it's the government and it's the ultimate interference.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And, of course, it stars Sean Penn, who I'm sure paid them to do the movie. I mean, believe.
Yeah.
This is right up Sean Penn's alley, isn't
now,
it?
Listen, he has come. I mean, it's not even fair almost to mention him in the same breath as Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
No, he is
a very accomplished. I mean, I'm a big fan. Maybe it's just me, but I find him very accomplished.
No. You know what's the why and why he's so respected? Is he goes totally into the character.
Right.
And it's magnificent. This is a good, strong political thriller, and you'll be very angry. You'll be very angry in it.
And so you would put Fair Game maybe a notch above the next 3 days?
Absolutely, I would, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Louis, always good to chat with you.
You bet, Mike.
Stay warm out there in Calgary.
Absolutely.
All right.
Bye.
Take care now. Louis B. Hobson, our Friday film fanatic, breaking down the weekend. And really, when it comes to the box office, Louis and I, quite often we'll talk about which movie we think will win the weekend box office tally. Well, this weekend there is absolutely no question as to what the ultimate winner will be. It will be Harry Potter part, is it 7? And really, this is part 7A because there's another part to it coming. But anyway, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, without question. It opened last night. We actually had on the 570 Morning News today with Glenn and Lisa comments from people who lined up for the midnight showing at the Galaxy. So Harry Potter will be the undisputed king of this weekend's box office. But we're getting closer to my favorite movie time of the year, where you begin to see these movies that have Oscar aspirations attached to them. They're not quite out yet, but the next 3 days, Russell Crowe, Fair Game with Sean Penn, both Academy Award winners passed. And while these movies will not be there, we are starting to see a little bit more substance coming out of Hollywood this week and into the months ahead as we head into Oscar season. So those are a few that you might want to drop $10 or so on over the course of this weekend. It's always nice to chat with Louis, especially when we find out that it's minus 22 in Calgary, which makes the plus 6 we've got going today feel that much better. We'll take a timeout, come back with the Coach's Show. Steve Spott, head coach, general manager of your Kitchener Rangers, joins us to break down the game against Kingston tonight. The Frontenacs have some aspirations in the Eastern Conference. How does Kitchener stack up, and what do you do to stop this team? Or maybe the better question is, what do you do to get through this team with Gudbranson and Doherty, the Cambridge native Taylor Doherty, on that blue line? We'll talk to Steve Spott about that and more on the Coach's Show after this. You are listening to The Gary Doyle Show. I'm Mike Farwell. This is 570 News.
Hey!
And welcome back to the show for your Friday afternoon. That music says it all. And of course, as Rangers fans, we hope to hear that music even more tonight, because every time the team scores, that's what we hear. It is time for the coaches show as we get you set for the game against Kingston tonight. Steve Spott joining us as he always does at this time of the week. And Steve, it was a pretty emotional game on Tuesday night. Was there a time that you kind of had to spend with the team and say, okay, let's get that out of our memory banks and start getting set for the next game, because it was so emotional?
It was, Mike. And, you know, I think right after the game we addressed it. You know, we talked about how we want to play, and, you know, how when you do get into playoff situations, you know, you have to be mentally tough. And we have a number of kids going to World Junior tournaments and representing their provinces, and you know, that's all part of mental toughness. And I think Jamie Dornbosch's comments in the paper were accurate, where he talked about, you know, us being mentally tough. And so it's hard, you know. I think we've got some players on the bench that wanted to get out on the ice late in the game and maybe address some of the ongoings. But saying that, you know, I was proud we were able to keep our composure, and that's what it was. It was just keeping our composure, getting our 2 points against a very good hockey club, and then moving on and preparing for tonight against Kingston.
More on Dornbosch and that power play that's just going great guns in a second. But since we're still on the Tuesday night game and the aftermath of it, a lot of people asking me, Steve, about the players that were on the ice at the end of the game. If you could do it again, would you run your bench any differently?
Well, you know, it's a good question, and I think it's a fair question, and I've got a number of calls myself on it, Mike. And, you know, I think sometimes as coaches, you know, you want to reward players. And last week, Mike Catenacci had come in to me, and, you know, he sought me out to talk about maybe playing a little bit more in a 5-on-4 or 5-on-3 situation. And, you know, what our fans have to recognize is these kids want to get contracts. They want to move on and play professional hockey. And Mike is a great penalty killer. He's a great 5-on-5 player. And, you know, thought if the appropriate time was there that maybe he could play some power play. He knows we're number one, but he really would like to get out there and get on some specialty teams with regards to our power play. And, you know, we're up, you know, obviously with a commanding lead on a 5-on-3 power play. And I think anyone that's coached can attest to the fact when you're killing a 5-on-3, the last thing you do is have your defenseman run into the corner, because, you know, now you're looking at a 4-on-2 somewhere on the ice. And, you know, I just thought it was the appropriate time to give him an opportunity maybe to get an assist or a goal. Would I go back and do it differently? 100%, no doubt. And I take full responsibility for putting Mike in that situation. But saying that, you know, I just could never fathom out on a 5-on-3 power play that a defenseman from the opposing team would chase into the corner when he's killing a penalty. But, you know, once bitten, twice shy. And I can tell you, I talked to Mike after. We dodged a bullet with him. And I'll think twice before I put him out in that situation again. But I can tell the fans my intentions were good. I was trying to get Michael some points. And, you know, it's a good lesson. Sometimes you coach with your heart and you try to help out your players because you care for them so much. And then it comes back to bite you in the backside. But I can tell everybody my intentions were good.
It's interesting you say that, Spotter, about Maggio and the play that he made on it. Because, I mean, for what it's worth, I'm just a guy that observes the game. Certainly don't have near the proximity to it that you do. But I said the same thing in terms of while the game was getting physical, you don't expect another player to show that level of disrespect. And I'm not trying to slam Maggio, but let's be honest, that was a really, really vicious hit, and he's been suspended for it.
Yeah, it was dirty, there's no doubt. And I've said from day one, our players at this level and our coaches at this level, we have an obligation to be role models to young kids that are in these buildings watching. And you know what, it's unacceptable, and the league is dealing with it. But you know, beyond the dirtiness of the hit, Mike, it's the tactical play. You're killing a 5-on-3 power play. What are you doing in the corner?
Right.
Finishing a body check.
Yeah.
And you just don't do that. And you can go to the most basic coaches seminar, and they'll tell you when you're killing a penalty 5-on-3, you can't go that deep into the corner and finish your hit. And so I thought Mike was in a protected situation where maybe he could get an assist or a goal. I wanted him to try to create some points because I just care for that kid so much with the way that he plays for a hockey club, the amount of shots that he blocks, the way he plays in battles. And, you know, and that's what I want our fans to know. I wasn't putting Michael Catenacci out there for any other reason to try to help his personal game and for his own good, not to put him out there in a tough situation where he can get hurt. But I'll also tell the fans that I'm not going to do that again.
You mentioned before you dodged a bullet. Does that mean Cat's okay? He's going to play tonight?
Yeah, he it looks like he's going to be good. He's had 2 full days here now where he's you know, he's gone through the battery of tests. I'll tell you what, it's tough to come back if you got a concussion in this league now, because the number of tests that you have to go through and hoops that you got to jump through. But he's come through. Today's another day. We'll see how he comes through today, but I fully expect him to be in the lineup tonight. But as I said, we dodged a big bullet there because he is that important to our hockey club.
All right, let's get back to Dornbosch and that power play, which has been going great guns. And again, as the coach, I mean, what is this design that you've sort of come up with where Dornbosch sneaks in there on the low side to the left of the goalie? Whatever it is, it's working.
Well, it is. We're in that high umbrella right now, and you know, you have to honor, you know, Ryan Murphy. You just have to, because Murph can beat you one of two ways. He's either going to beat you with his shot, or he's going to make a move and make a pass that's going to beat you. So what we've been able to do is use Akeson and that first unit and overload that one side with Akeson and Murph, and what it's doing is it's freeing up Dorney, and he's able to use his own hockey sense to kind of find those holes and those loose pucks off rebounds. And you know, it's something that it's a comfortable area for him. We've watched a lot of video from him in Peterborough, and he was dangerous in that area. So I think it's comfort zones. You know, Akeson likes being up top. Murph, obviously, at the top of the umbrella. And it's a nice twosome on that side. And, of course, Mattia on the goal line with Gabriel at the net front. So, you know, again, it's keeping it simple, but they're definitely in a good groove right now. And Dorney's done a nice job off that weak side.
Having said that, tonight it presents an entirely different story with the Gudbranson and Doherty twin towers, if you will, that will likely be out there killing penalties for Kingston tonight.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Big, strong kids, active sticks, long sticks. You know, they've added Mitch Galton to their lineup now with a trade with the Erie Otters, and so this is a formidable team and a team that is trying to win the Eastern Conference. And you know, Larry Mavity has done a nice job with Doug Gilmore, you know, assembling a team that's an older veteran group now. And this is going to be a very difficult game. This isn't going to be the type of game that maybe we've seen the last couple of years against the Kingstons, where we've run up some numbers and had success. I fully expect this to be an exciting game. I think the one thing, Mike, that we have to address is, you know, they're a run-and-gun team. They're a team that likes to activate their defensemen. They're a team that likes to maybe cheat a little bit to offense. And we're going to have to be sharp defensively tonight, and we're going to have to stay out of the penalty box because they've got nine weapons up front that can hurt us, and obviously those two big guys on the back end that like to rush. So we're going to have to be sharp.
Sounds a little bit like a clone of your own club. You mean you've got defensemen like to join the rush too?
We do. Yeah. And we have to be careful, though, that we pick our spots, because if we turn the puck over, they're going to sting us. They've got the offense to sting us. So, you know, you've got Philip Grubauer in net, who's a Memorial Cup champion. This is going to be a good game. I'll tell you what, if I'm a fan, this is a game I'm going to want to watch tonight, because you've got some great players on both teams out there.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it too, and it just got all the better with the moves that Kingston made. Final point, is there any time, Steve, that a 7-game winning streak becomes a distraction?
You know what, I think it's a focus, Mike. I think distraction might be a little bit harsh. I think keeping focus, it can be difficult, because what happens generally is, and you're around here enough to know that your practice level, your details in practice, you can't let these kids off, because they're human, and maybe they'll let their guard down a little bit when it comes to the level of intensity in practice. So I think that's the distraction that we're trying to be aware of, that they aren't letting their guard down, that we are preparing for our opponents with respect. And, you know, that's, I think anyone that knows me knows how important details are, and that's one thing I've really tried to harp on our kids, that we can't let our battle level and our intensity come down. And, you know, not to sound too cliche-ish, but, you know, we have to prepare for the next game. And, you know, luckily we've got good veteran guys in there with Gabriel and Akey and Tip that really do a lot of my work in the dressing room with coaching and making sure that the focus is good. So it's been a good group so far, and I'm looking forward, hopefully, to keep this thing going.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't ask yet about Sunday, because I know you're a game-to-game thing guy, but, it's not getting any easier this weekend for sure.
No, obviously the Ottawa 67s are playing well. Shane Prince is playing outstanding for the 67s, and, you know, it's going to be a tough game. Obviously, they're a team that also is looking to do some damage in the Eastern Conference, and, you know, it's interesting. They're tough games for us because we can only do a lot of our scouting through Sean Murphy, our advanced scout, and through video, so it's a they're different opponents, and you're not quite sure what to get. You know, video doesn't tell the whole story, so they're exciting, and I like these games coming into our building.
All right, thanks for the time this afternoon. Go get them tonight, Spotter.
Thanks, Mike.
Steve Spott, head coach, general manager of your Kitchener Rangers, and we run the gamut right there. Would he put Michael Catenacci back out in that situation? No, given what happened. But because he cares for the players the way that he does, and Michael Catenacci was looking to further his own game in terms of experience by playing in the situation that presented itself on Tuesday night, it was a mutual decision on the part of the player requesting and the coach granting the request to put Catenacci out there. The good news is that it appears as though Michael Catenacci will be in the Rangers lineup tonight. We don't even need to build this one up, do we? This is going to be a fun hockey game. It's a good club from Kingston. It's got an all-star coach. And, of course, he's up against a very details-oriented guy. And, by the way, a guy who's got his own team on a 7-game winning streak in Steve's spot. It is going to be fun at the odd tonight, and we will see you at the rink. That is the Coach's Show for another week. In fact, that is the Gary Doyle Show for another week. Thanks so much for spending the time with me this week that you have. Thanks for all of the phone calls and the opinions that we shared. I certainly look forward to the next opportunity to do it here on the radio station. In the meantime, stay tuned for All News Afternoons with Joe Pavia and Arlene Dowell. That is next. Thanks also to Matt Head for technically producing this show all week. And again, I'll see you at the hockey rink. I'm Mike Farwell. This is 570 News.